fasten your seatbelt. I am taking you for the ride of your life. I'm going to show you what this car can really do. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Hang on.
Okay.
Here we go.
Hold on to your butts.
Forget him, kid.
To infinity and beyond!
It might be a tumor.
It's not a tumor. It's not a tumor at all.
So you can go ahead and ask me what you're going to ask me, and my natural response could be to get offended.
Well, fine, let's talk about it.
Any thoughts of your own on this matter? Or do you, is that your thing? You come into a bar, you read some obscure passage, and then pretend you pawn it off as your own idea just to impress some girls?
Just another American who saw too many movies as a child?
Yeah, well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
All right, all right, all right.
You're listening to the 30-something Movie Podcast. One movie each week, 30 years in the making. It is the 30-something Movie Podcast. I am your host, John Reed.
Huzzah! I'm here,
as always, with my good friends, Pat and Bo. Gentlemen, how's it going?
Great, well, John. How are you?
Doing all right. Doing all right. I actually, through a series of conversations, I believe that I have been given a new nickname by some of our other movie podcasting friends.
Mm, really?
And I thought I'd try this out on you and see what you think. You know how when the British monarch gets announced, they have like a whole series of titles that go along with their name?
Okay. Yes.
So I've taken a title that I think was given to me by someone else. And because we were talking about how much I really enjoy just some really terrible movies. I enjoy finding the dregs, on Tubi and, you know, we got some weird stuff coming up this year with our Patreon, episodes. And so, I was given the title by someone, Defender of the Filth. And so I decided to take that a step further. Yeah.
Defender of the Filth.
Instead of Defender of the Faith.
Defender of the Faith.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I like things like Alien 3 and like other, I like weird stuff and, you know, we'll be doing Damselvis, Daughter of Helvis later this year and things like that. So I, you know what, honestly, I take that title with pride, because yes, I do love stupid, stupid movies. So I will, that's a badge of honor. I decided to take that and expand it. So I don't know if this is how I introduce myself in every episode of the podcast going forward. But I took a little stab at turning myself into a full-blown British monarch-type announcement whenever I enter the pod. So here we go.
Okay.
John the First, by the grace of God of the 30-something Movie Podcast and Podcast Full of Kryptonite and other guest spots on other podcast realms and territories, Gloria Angina, Defender of the Filth.
That's not bad.
I'm going to take that as my title from now on.
I like it.
So.
Far cry from podcast host, but you know, it works.
I mean, you know, it's a little wordy, but,
both are accurate.
I think it's fine. But we're not here to talk about me. We're here to talk about another kind of royalty, Egyptian royalty.
Ooh, I see what you did there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's, good. I mean, there was a good, some tires were screeching on that turn, but you know, we made it.
We did.
Yeah. We didn't hydroplane anywhere. We're doing fine. We're talking Stargate.
Just fine here, thanks.
Totally fine. We're talking Stargate. Not SG-1, not the TV shows, not that other stuff. We might mention them, but we're talking about the original Stargate movie, the Roland Emmerich movie. We're going to be covering that one. This is our first episode of the month of April. So here in just a moment, we are going to hop in the DeLorean and head back to April 1994. And see what was going on back then. But before we do that, real quick, we do spoil. So if we're talking, we mentioned a movie you don't want to hear anything about, maybe hit that little skip button a couple of times and we'll move on past
skip
that.
Ahead.
You should be okay.
Be prepared.
Be prepared. Always be prepared.
My soul is prepared.
Exactly. Is your podcast app prepared? How's yours? Visit our website, 30podcast.com, where you can leave a rating, a voicemail. You can become a co-executive producer via Patreon over there. And we really, really could use your help over there as well. We try to put as much as we can to make this podcast, this show, be something that you love and enjoy coming back to week in and week out. So just wanted to point out really, really quickly that if you are enjoying the show, and thinking about other things that you might enjoy as well, we do put out at least 4, sometimes 5 episodes per month. When you join on Patreon, any level of support gets you at least 2 extra bonus episodes every month. So you're looking at anywhere from 6 to 7 episodes of the podcast every single month. If you were to come in and donate and join us at a $5 a month level there, that is less than $1 an episode. So thinking about other things, other entertainment that you enjoy, if the podcast is worth that to you, then we would encourage you, help us out there, help keep things running. There are some costs associated with it, so we really, really appreciate your help with that. And if the podcast means that to you, then please, by all means, join us over there. Otherwise, if you're not able to, totally get it. People are in all kinds of different places financially, and if it's not something that you can do or you're not willing to do, share the show. Let other people know about it. Let other people know what you're enjoying about it. Find an episode that you nearly peed your pants laughing at and share that with your friends.
Pants peeing is a good indicator of enjoyment.
And then take that $5 a month that you would have donated and go get yourself new pants.
Mm-hmm. What was that Adam Sandler bit? Are you a pants pisser? Man, everyone's pants
pisser. Peeing cool. Your pants is cool.
Peeing your pants is cool.
Peeing your pants is cool.
Yeah. If peeing your pants is cool, then consider me Miles Davis.
No.
It's from the movie, Bo.
It is.
I'm just quoting.
And I think the response in the movie was no.
Yeah.
I remember.
I see. Uh-huh. All right. Okay, let's hop in the DeLorean, head back in time, and see what was going on in April of 1994.
When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're going to see some serious...
All right. Some news. April 4th, Netscape Communications was founded as Mosaic Communications. April 4th, 1994. Mm-hmm. Any Netscape Navigator users in here?
I use some Navigator in my day.
Yep.
There is a fantastic documentary. I'm going to call it a docudrama.
All right.
Or docu-series, because it wasn't a true documentary.
Just don't call it late for dinner.
Called The Valley of the Boom.
Oh.
And it was fantastic about that. It ran on National Geographic, of all things. It kind of chronicled that early browser war time. And when Mark Andreessen was working at Netscape, almost said Netflix. Yeah. And it's crazy good. Bradley Whitford stars in it. It's good stuff. I highly recommend it.
Nice. Let's see. April 6th, the plane carrying the Rwandan president and the Burundian president is shot down by surface-to-air missiles, which ends the peace negotiations and sparks the Rwandan genocide. April 14th, Turner Classic Movies, cable channel launches. Which I don't know the last time they actually showed a classic movie, but, you know, it's like how MTV enjoyed a few good years of music videos, and ever since then it's been reality TV.
Just remember, it takes all kinds.
That's true. Yeah, there are all kinds. April 18th, Arsenio Hall announces that he will end his late night TV talk show in May 1994. You know, the fact that he had to end his late night TV talk show just like a month or so later, that's one of those things that makes you go, yeah. Births, Saoirse Ronan, the actress, American actress that was in Brooklyn and Lady Bird, was born in the Bronx on April 12th of 1994. Former U.S. President Richard Nixon, that's right, the big dick is here, get ready, suffers a stroke and passes away 4 days after his stroke on April 22nd, 1994. April 5th, 1994, American grunge rocker Kurt Cobain from Nirvana commits suicide at age 27. Very, very young.
Yes.
April,
sad.
April 16th, Ralph Ellison, the American writer who wrote Invisible Man, dies of pancreatic cancer at 80. And April 13th, Richard Scarry, the American children's book writer and illustrator, What Do People Do All Day? And I think what was the other one? Cars and Planes and Trains. No, Cars and Planes and Things That Go. Something like that. That was the one we always had, the one that had all the vehicles. Anyway, he died at age 74 on April 30th, 1994. That was the one as a kid. I think it was the Cars and Planes and Things That Go, or and maybe I'm getting the title of that wrong. That was one of those big picture books that had all the different kinds of vehicles, like the pickle car and, you know, the hot dog car. And on every page, I'm convinced every page except for one, there was this little teeny tiny character named Goldbug that you had to try to find. It was like a precursor to Where's Waldo? I found that thing on every single page except for one, and I've looked at those stupid pages for 43 years, and I cannot find that bug on that page. I'm convinced he's not on that page. But I'm also convinced they did that to torment me for four decades.
Well, yes. I mean,
yeah.
It's why I think you're missing. I think you're missing it.
That's why the man's name is Richard Scarry.
I think your family is in cahoots. And they have hidden it from you.
Oh.
Is that what that little smudge of whiteout is on that one page?
I'm just saying.
Yeah. Oh.
I'm thinking there's some shenanigans afoot here.
I might not put it past some of them. Yeah.
There's always that group that in your head you're like, yeah, they would do that to me.
Yeah. I could see that. Top book was The Celestine Prophecy by James Redfield. Have you read it?
Yeah.
Oh, I haven't read that one. Okay.
It's...
You're making a recommendation.
No.
No.
It's an odd mix of trying to be fiction and self-help, I feel like. It's very strange.
Okay.
Very interesting
fictional
story.
Fictional self-help.
Right. Yeah. It starts out like you think it's going to be a story, but it is not.
Okay.
It's very strange, yes.
Fictional self-help, like all the fitness people on TikTok.
Bingo.
Yeah, okay.
Bingo.
What's up, Pat?
I was just going to say, how about TikTok, period?
Well, that's also true. Top movies are Major League 2, D2, The Mighty Ducks, Four Weddings and a Funeral, and Bad Girls. Top songs were The Sign from Ace of Base, which was our top song in March and ekes out one more weekend here in April of 94. And then that is replaced for the rest of the month of April by Bump and Grind by R. Kelly.
Well, that's
not really sure what to say about that, except okay.
I could go back to a previous conversation we had just a few moments ago and make a comment, but I will not.
It's best.
Save that $5 for Patreon. Anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Let's see. I think we can hop out of the DeLorean now. We've got some trivia related to our movie here. So we're talking Stargate. This one came out on October 28th, 1994, rated PG-13, 2 hours and 1 minute. Roland Emmerich was the director. He did Independence Day and The Day After Tomorrow. Basically, when you absolutely positively must destroy every last building or continent on the planet, accept no substitutes, call Roland Emmerich.
Mm-hmm. He good.
He will help you destroy whatever needs to be destroyed. Writers for this one, Roland Emmerich and Dean Devlin. Emmerich did 2012. Dean Devlin did Godzilla 1998. Producers for this one, Dean Devlin, Oliver Eberle, and Joel B. Michaels. Devlin did Independence Day and Godzilla. Eberle did The 13th Floor. And Michaels did Terminator 3, Rise of the Machines. Composer was David Arnold, who did Independence Day and Casino Royale. Cinematographer was Carl Walter Lindenlaub, who did Independence Day and The Chronicles of Narnia, Prince Caspian. Editors were Derek Brecken and Michael J. Duthie. Brecken did Chronicles of Riddick, and Duthie did The November Man. This was done by Carolco Pictures and MGM. Budget was $55 million. Box office was $196.6 million, so it made some money. Did pretty well for itself. Flickmetrics gives it, so here's where things get a little interesting. Flickmetrics gives it a 58%.
Ouch.
Yeah.
So people coming out of the theaters
didn't like it. Gave it a B+.
Ouch.
So cinema score is okay. I mean, B plus is okay for a movie. Typically, you know, if people really enjoy it, we see A's and A minuses. B plus is not bad. So a cinema score of B plus is all right. So people coming out of the theaters, they were fine with it. Didn't give it an A, but gave it a B plus. But the flick metrics, that's where, and that can be kind of a collection of, you know, people in the modern day reviewing it, critics of the time. I mean, it's a bunch of stuff all lumped together. So that 58% is coming from at least five different sources to pull that average score together. So, all right. Characters in this one. Kurt Russell is Colonel Jack O'Neill, showing up in Big Trouble in Little Cairo. He was in Escape from New York.
Oh, boy.
Escape from New York and Tombstone. That would have been a great name for this movie.
It would have.
It, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Big Trouble in Little Alexandria. I think I made a good one. What was the name of the planet in this? Abydos?
Abydos.
Yeah, Big Trouble in Little Abydos. That could be a good name. James Spader was Dr. Daniel Jackson. He was in Sex, Lies, and Videotape. Pat loved that one. And he was also in Crash. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. He was.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sex, Lies, and Videotapes. That was a good one, right?
Yeah, you loved it.
Did I?
That was one of your favorites.
Okay. Was that the one where he just videotaped everybody?
Yeah, you hated it. I don't know.
Did I not like the premise of the movie, or did I just not like the character in it?
No, I think you just, you didn't like the premise of the movie, and I'm not sure you liked the characters either.
And James Spader has a tendency to play unlikable characters. Like
he does. He can tend to be, especially back in the 80s, he could be a little slimy.
Yeah, not often the hero, at best an anti-hero, and that's pushing it for some of his characters. Like, and he does it disturbingly well. I mean, even on Boston Public, that character was not exactly didn't have a whole ton of redeeming, not Boston Public, Boston Legal.
Yeah.
It didn't have a ton of redeeming qualities, but man, what a character. And his recent run on The Blacklist was amazing. Yeah, I am sure he is a weird dude.
Okay.
But what an actor. Like, he's got some chops, man.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Pat, I believe that the title, let's see. I'm going to go back to our episode number 246, where we did Sex, Lies, and Videotape from 1989.
A while ago.
Yeah.
A while ago.
I believe the title of that episode was taken from something you said in the episode.
Yeah.
The title is episode number 246. Can't we just talk about Billy D. Williams?
That I remember that now.
Well, what have we here?
Yeah. And let's see. I'll read you a little bit of the description here. We learned that when it comes to movies like Sex, Lies, and Videotape, Pat doesn't get angry. That's the thing. He's always angry. So if you enjoy artsy movies about mostly irredeemable characters who cheat on each other, this one's for you. Or if you like houseplants, they feature prominently.
Okay.
So,
yeah,
I don't know if that's jogging your memory, but
it's helping.
Okay. I mean, I assume you repressed it as far down as you could.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Another James Spader character that I thought was hilarious is Robert California on The Office.
Oh, God, yes. So weird and so fun.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and that whole, like, that part of The Office gets a bad rap.
It's in kind of a weird set of seasons.
But, man, Robert, the blend of Robert California, and I'm going to forget the actress's name, and I feel bad for it, but the blend of Robert California and Nelly is so good. He's just a kook. And he is a kook as well.
Yeah.
But another example of his just strange characters that he gravitates to or gravitate to him. That'd be an interesting case study. Does he find these roles or do they find him?
Yeah, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
because they're all just a bit off.
Catherine Tate was Nellie.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, so James Spader, Dr. Daniel Jackson, where he in this movie does play a redeemable character, and
he
and
does a nice like that's which, the which fun kind of part about it is,
yeah,
he does in this do that,
yeah,
which is amazing.
Yeah. All right, moving along. James Spader's hair is played by Peter Mayhew. Jay Davidson plays Ra. I mean, that's some hair.
It is. It is definitely a thing unto itself. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Jay Davidson, who plays Ra, was in The Crying Game. Vivica Lindfors plays Catherine Langford. She passed in 1995. She was in Creepshow and The Exorcist 3. Alexis Cruz played Skara, was in Drag Me to Hell and Why Do Fools Fall in Love. Millie Avital played Shauri. She was in Kissing a Fool and The Human Stain. John Deal played Lieutenant Kowalski. He was in Jurassic Park 3 and Nixon. Leon Rippey was General West. He was in The Patriot and Eight-Legged Freaks. Carlos Lachau played Anubis. He was in Silencers and I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker. Jamon Hansu played Horus. He was in Blood Diamond and In America. Erica Varley played Kasuf. He was in The Mummy and Mr. Deeds. And French Stewart played Lieutenant Ferretti. He was in Third Rock from the Sun and Love Stinks.
This version of French Stewart is so hard to reconcile with the versions you get later.
I know.
It's hysterical when you realize it's him.
When it's, I'm looking at the credits as we're watching this movie and I'm going, wait, French Stewart's not in this movie. And then he opens his mouth at one point, and I go, "Wait a minute!
That is wait a minute! Hold on!
I'm not sure that that works in my brain.
It doesn't, and it's funny. Even when you remember that it's coming,
nope. Yeah,
you are still like, oh yeah,
right.
He's in this, in the military.
Right. The fact that he plays a soldier.
Yeah, a serious one, not like." You know, this isn't in the army now here. This is like,
right.
Pretty don't mess around. Mm-hmm.
In a journey that spans the cosmos, Daniel Jackson, Colonel Jack O'Neill, and their team unlock an ancient portal to a distant world. Thrust into a battle against the godlike Ra, they must forge alliances and ignite a rebellion to save both Abydos and Earth from destruction. This is the story of Stargate, where the key to our past unlocks the power to save our future.
It has been buried for thousands of years. A mystery. A secret. A threshold to the future.
Where'd you find this? I've never seen anything like this.
One man will break the code and open the door.
Well, this should read Stargate. That was in front of us the whole time.
The other will lead the way.
Why are you here?
I'm here in case you succeed.
Jackson's identified the seventh symbol.
Backup storage, reserve power, on.
What is that?
It's your Stargate.
We've opened a doorway to a world we know nothing about.
Theme has locked itself onto a point somewhere in the Kalium galaxy.
It's on the other side of the known universe.
Your turn now.
They prepared for danger.
Begin final evacuation.
They expected the unknown.
Stabilizing system.
Initiated commencement sequence.
But they could never have imagined this.
Shoot anything that comes down that ramp.
Your job here is to realign the Stargate. Can you do that or not?
I can't.
What the hell is going on?
My orders were simple. Track down signs of any possible danger. Well, I found some.
I can't make it work without the seventh symbol.
You got 7 minutes.
Now, the most amazing discovery of our time.
Jackson,
wait for me,
is about to become the most extraordinary adventure of all time. Kurt Russell, James Spader, Jay Davidson. Stargate. A Roland Emmerich film.
All right, major moments for this one. The discovery of the Stargate in 1928. We start off in 1928, and Professor Paul Langford unearths the Stargate in Giza, Egypt, a discovery that would change human understanding of the universe once they unlock everything, 70-whatever-odd years later. The little girl that's with him, obviously she is in charge of the project later on as we jump ahead to 1994, and Daniel Jackson is brought in to translate the hieroglyphs that end up unlocking the Stargate and leading to the establishment of a wormhole that takes them to the distant planet of Abydos. And I was absolutely thrilled that, much like other movies that we've dealt with up to this point, that you do have a, you do have the moment of he's writing on the board and retranslating the whole thing. And I love that moment, too, because Richard Kind is hilarious. And he's like, who translated this?
Who translated this?
Me. But going through the whole thing, and he's, you know, he gets, what was it, like, Doorway to Heaven? He's like, it's not Doorway to Heaven. And then I'm waiting for it. And as soon as he writes it, it's Stargate.
Stargate.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was waiting for that.
I know. I know. Super excited about it.
Excuse me. And as soon as I heard that, I was waiting for the drop.
There you go. So they do arrive on Abydos. Jackson, Colonel Jack O'Neill, and their team emerge inside a pyramid on Abydos, unable to return without the correct symbols. They do encounter an Abydos tribe that they end up being taken to a city by a tribe that is mining a strange mineral and worships Ra, an alien who is posing as a god. And then Ra shows up. This part, you know, I thought was kind of interesting because they land their ship there on top of the existing pyramid, and it comes down. It is also shaped like a pyramid, different coloring and whatnot. But what I thought was interesting is that Ra and his forces land, and then what they start doing is they start going out, and amongst this tribe and any of the other planets that I'm sure they've come from and they've enslaved, they start to try to tell people, you know, if you just invest in this product that I have, that then we can get you to get two more investors. And then from there, right, those investors,
they tell two friends.
And they tell two friends and so on.
So on.
And so on. And the idea is, you know, the initial promoters then... at each level, the investors increase, and so there is increasing returns for those mm-hmm. that are in this plan, let's call it. A scheme, in fact, we could refer to it as. Mm-hmm.
With multi-levels.
Multi-levels. Oftentimes three sides to it, I feel like. But yeah, so I'm going to coin a phrase. I'm going to say that Ra's whole plan is somewhat of a pyramid scheme. Would that be accurate? Would you say?
Would you, Hefe?
My name is Hefe. Yes. So he and clearly they do. I mean, they go from one planet to, and then they conquer two planets, and then those planets maybe help them conquer two other planets, and so on.
Certainly,
so
the slave labor does
exactly. So it's I think it's a wonderful example of a phrase I'm coining called a pyramid scheme.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
French Stewart interacting with aliens. I thought that'd go better, given his history. But I guess at this point, when was he on Third Rock from the Sun? Was it? It was after this.
It was after this. Yeah.
Okay. Well, so this is his first encounter with aliens.
They messed him up good.
Yeah. I'm sure there was another encounter in between this and Third Rock, because then that would be his. That'd be a close encounter, in fact, of the third of the rock kind.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
Okay.
Certainly of the personal kind.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Say no more.
So yeah, Ra comes and causes some trouble there. Colonel O'Neill and his team return to the pyramid, and now find that there is this massive black pyramid-like structure there. And they unfortunately discover that the Terrell Corporation from Blade Runner has built a satellite office there, and is going to be running things from Abydos from this point on. We do get introduced to the idea that this Ra character, who in Egyptian mythology we know as Ra, the sun god, that this is actually an alien and an ancient alien, to go back to the History Channel, an ancient alien that was dying and needed to replenish his life force. And so he came to Earth, he found slave labor on Earth and was able to possess one of the young men that he captured on Earth. And that has been the body that has kept him going now for a while. So dangerous, dangerous dude. Taking over, possessing people left and right. What I really enjoyed, and I'm getting a little bit off from my description of our major moments here, but what I really enjoy is that later on in the movie, all the costume changes that Ra goes through, and we really, what's really fun about it is we get a complete, like, when he's gone through some of the different costume changes, like he's raided Ming the Merciless's wardrobe. And he looks like he's something out of Flash Gordon by the time we get into the end of this movie. I'm like, and I'm here for it. I'm totally fine with it. I'm like, yes, bring, yes, bring more of the sci-fi. Bring more of the kind of an homage to, you know,
good Flash pull Gordon with Ming, and, by the way.
What's that?
Good pull, Ming the Merciless.
Oh, thank you.
Love it.
I think that last costume he's wearing, like, I looked at that and immediately. I was like, oh, Flash Gordon. I'm sure there's something more Egyptian related, but yeah. Flash. Let's see. Yeah, we learned that that Ra is using human bodies to extend his life. There is a failed attempt to confront Ra, which results in Jackson's death. He died, Mr. Coach Klein, and they capture O'Neill and some of the others. Jackson is later revived by Ra. So we find out that he's got a bit of a chamber in there that he can bring people back to life in. And so he brings him back to life, and there is a bit of a rebellion. So Skara and his friends aid in a diversion that will allow for an escape and a plan to fight back against Ra. Originally, Jackson is told, look, you either execute your friends or I will kill anyone who's ever seen you. And at this point, Jackson has kind of fallen in love with Shauri, and, you know, apparently there was a bit of a, they don't have shotguns, but I was going to say a bit of a shotgun wedding. Let's say a spear tip wedding. I think that's the equivalent. And so we end up having, there's a bit of a fight back against that. The final confrontation, the team with the help of the Abydos tribe overthrows the remaining guards. And we had found earlier on that Colonel O'Neill had come to this planet with a bomb. And it was his plan to, if they found anything that was questionable or a threat to Earth, he was supposed to blow it up from that side. He was going to stay behind because he, you know, he's dealing with some stuff because of the accidental death of his son, who shot himself probably with one of Jack's own guns, I think we're kind of led to believe, since he's in the military and might have them readily available around the house. And so he's struggling with that throughout the movie. So he's planning on just staying behind. He's planning on getting everybody back to Earth, staying behind, setting off this bomb, which he does start to. He sets the bomb and kind of, you know, is, we've got a, what is it, at a like 15-minute timer or something like that on it. Get to a point where time runs down a bit, and Shauri gets shot and actually gets killed by one of the by one of Ra's minions, not like little yellow minions, but like big Egyptian godlike
Horus-looking guys.
Right.
Yes.
She gets shot and she's killed, so she's done for. Jackson has a plan, however. He knows that he was brought back to life. So he goes and takes her. There's 6 minutes left, I notice. We don't know how much time it took to bring him back to life in that little chamber. So I'm really hoping, I'm seeing 6 minutes left until detonation. They can't turn the bomb off. He's running off to try to revive her in the machine. And I'm really hoping that that sarcophagus is more microwave and less crockpot, because they don't have a ton of time left. So we're going to need to, you know, move things along and get the reviving going a little bit faster. So they do revive her in time. They're able to get there. Space Moses shows up with the cavalry to save the day over the top of the hill. They come charging down and attacking the Horus-looking dudes that were with Ra. And the final plan, because they can't turn the bomb off, it's going to go off, and they're not going to be able to get to minimum safe distance. So they beam the Genesis device up to the ship and actually strike that, reverse it. Given this story, they beam the Exodus device up to the ship, and they blow up the Terrell Corporation with a lovely Praxis shockwave. Ra is dead,
yep.
And everybody's going to live happily ever after.
Happily.
O'Neill and his team return to Earth. Jackson decides to stay behind with Shaori and live out the rest of his life there on Abydos.
Yeah.
Those are the I'll major play. Moments.
Therefore, breaking the Prime Directive.
Correct.
And erasing the picture of his future children.
Correct. The Polaroid is disappearing. Anything else? Or before we get into deep thoughts?
I think that sums it up, man.
All right. Okay. Let's dig a little deeper into the depths of the pyramid here.
And now, deep thoughts.
I have an opinion on this matter.
Don't mince words, Bones. What do you really think?
I like it a lot.
Wow. It's very deep. Thank you.
It's very deep. Thank you. First question, one of our typical first questions. When was the first time you saw this movie, and do you like it?
Love it.
Okay.
This is one of those where I want to be the guy that says he saw it in the theater, but I don't think so. It was probably, cable or Blockbuster, but I remember seeing it right when it came out. Like, we were excited for this movie. I can't remember why. I can't remember if it was good marketing or if there was a reason we wanted to see it, but a general, like, ancient Egypt is like a fascination for me, so that could have had something to do with it too.
Yeah. I'm jumping way into the weeds with this, but I totally hear what you're saying about Egypt being just a cool, an ancient Egypt and kind of that being a cool setting for this, even though I know it was on another planet. I just want to take a rider to that. The guards that have those helmets, those things were cool. And I remember seeing the trailer, you catch glimpses of them, and it's just like, that's just cool looking. So indeed. I just want to throw that tag in there.
John, when did you first see it?
Oh, when did I first see it? I actually think this might have been a theater viewing for us.
Nice.
I feel like, because I don't think my dad would have specifically have said, oh, I want to go see a Roland Emmerich movie. But I know that he really enjoyed Independence Day. Like, he really enjoyed some of the others. I'm trying to remember. I think he really enjoyed Day After Tomorrow. But I do feel like there's just something about this type of movie. And I think especially the blending of the sci-fi with the Egyptian elements. I seem to remember that this was probably one that we saw in the theater. I can't give you specifics, but I really, really have a pretty strong feeling this is one we would have seen in the theater because we would have been old enough to go see it. Wouldn't have taken all of the kids because one of us would have been, 6 years old, 5 years old at the time. So probably just taken the two older siblings. But I definitely can think of it. And I've always enjoyed this one. From the first time I saw it, I remember seeing the trailers as a kid, and you'd see those, like you were saying, the Horus-type guard characters. There was a point when I was in elementary school, and I just thought hieroglyphics were the coolest thing ever, and I was trying to teach myself how to read them. And I check out books from the school library, and be like, oh, all right, well, here's this one means this, and this one. in elementary school. So, I mean, that was always, that interest was always there. So if you give me a movie where you blend that with some sci-fi and some booms, then yeah, I'm pretty much going to enjoy that.
I had a stamp kit. And it was hieroglyphics, and they were stamps, like the old rubber stamps, and then a stamp pad, and you could stamp out the hieroglyphics.
Oh, nice. I would have stamped everything with that if I had.
I kind of did.
Yeah, did you? Yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Did you stamp your walls?
Oh, I'm sure. Okay. I don't remember doing it, but come on.
Yeah.
What are we kidding?
I mean, you have to. If it's hieroglyphics, you kind of like cover the entire wall of your bedroom in that, don't you?
Right. Like I had, you know, we had an aunt who traveled a lot, and she brought us all like the little Ankh necklaces with our names on them and stuff. Like, yeah, that was cool stuff.
Yeah. I'm going to use my stamp and do this all over my bedroom wall and tell the epic tale of the 10th birthday. Bo the third.
First of his, third of his name.
Third
sorry.
Of his name. Did slay the. Yeah.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I really enjoy this movie. And I can understand. I mean, there are certain bits and pieces about this. I mean, I can understand why somebody might try to take it too seriously and give it a little bit of a lower score on one of these scoring sites. I get it. But I mean, I think. As a director, as a writer and a director, I think Roland Emmerich, I enjoy his movies. Like they've always been entertaining to me, whether we're talking about, he did The Patriot. Didn't he do The Patriot?
Mm-hmm.
Like he did The Patriot. He did Stargate. He did, 2012, Independence Day, Day After Tomorrow, like all of these movies. It's just fun. And every time I watch one of these movies, in fact, my wife and I, whenever we're watching one of these, and somebody's like blowing up the Statue of Liberty, or they're, you know, freezing all of America so that everybody has to escape, to the southern border. All of this stuff, we tend to just sit there, watch these movies and go, you know, whoever wrote this and got a chance to make this was having a lot of fun.
Indeed.
You know, you get to mix space aliens with pyramids and sci-fi, and you can tell they're just having fun.
Exactly.
I mean, it is one of the things I enjoy too is, and I think it's of a time where you've got this mixture of CGI is just kind of in its infancy. I mean, it's starting to develop. You've had Jurassic Park. You've had a few other things. You've had Terminator 2 at this point. You've had some stuff that has really started to build up CGI as a viable alternative to practical effects. But this kind of movie I really enjoy because I think it's got a great balance of both. You've got your CGI. You've got your CGI where it's needed, and you've got your practical effects where they're needed too. And I think that's the sweet spot for me when it comes to movies, is the blending of, don't just do CGI for the sake of CGI. You know, the illustrious and majestical GL who brought us Star Wars. I know he loves his CGI, but that is one of the things that does bother me about the prequel movies and some of the other changes that were made to the original trilogy is the overuse of CGI. And I get that he wanted to see his vision fully fleshed out. But there's just something special about a movie that can blend it in the right way. And I feel like this is one of those movies. Stargate is one of those movies. Independence Day is one of those movies. Day After Tomorrow is one of those movies. They're on a scope and a scale that seems huge and majestic and sweeping. I think of these movies in terms of their scope and scale as being like and certainly I'm not putting it on a pedestal next to a Gone with the Wind or anything like that. But when you think of like these epic historical movies, I look at some of Roland Emmerich's movies and I think, you know what? He's, even if it's not the same story-wise and maybe it doesn't have the same impact story-wise, he's swinging for the fences on pretty much all these movies. And for the most part, He's making contact and he's doing just fine.
Mm-hmm.
I would have to agree.
Yes.
So yeah, I do enjoy that mixture, you know, where you can use just enough of the CGI. Cause some of it's little stuff too. Like I know in some of the trivia, it had mentioned that, when they did kind of early test showings of this, that people didn't think there was enough visually to show that Ra was an alien. And so they had to add in that kind of eye effect where he had like the glowing white eyes and the, cause early audiences were like, is that just like a person?
Yeah, that's interesting. Cause they don't play up that any of, It's funny.
Yeah.
You don't think about stuff like that because it's always been like that, but then you hear that it wasn't always there. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the other interesting things about this, and we already kind of mentioned it, is I don't think of, when I think of his different roles that he's taken on, this is probably one of the first times I think of James Spader as being a, you know, somebody that you're rooting for.
Yeah, it doesn't happen often. But the funny thing about it is, even when he's a bad guy, he's not a bad guy, if you know what I mean. Like, some of his roles, you end up rooting for the wrong guy, like, the wrong guy, in air quotes, and you realize it, and you're like, how did he do this?
Right.
But yes, in this one, you are rooting for him. He is your guy. He's also, not only is he the hero and your guy, but he's also kind of us entering the, we're not all Egyptologists and whatnot, but he is the fish out of water in a military scenario. And he is the, you know, the guy who's making the weird sounds and trying to speak slower to the guy from the new planet.
Yeah.
You know? So good. I love this movie. It is just so fun.
Yeah.
It's a regular rewatch. I mean, pretty often I'll kick back with this one.
Yeah, it had been a few years since I had watched this one. I feel like I went and rewatched it again, maybe like 3 or 4 years ago, and made the same comment, like same comment I made watching it this time around, but made the same comment before. I was like, wow, I really like this movie. Like, I'm not sure why I don't rewatch it more often, but I really do enjoy this movie.
Mm-hmm. If you need to just sit back, enjoy, pop some popcorn, this is your movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a scene or is there an element to this movie that you really, really enjoy? Like, is there one in particular or are there a couple in particular that really jump out at you? I like all the scenes where they're trying to understand each other and they're trying to communicate, you know, food or, you know, you eat this or, you know, this is fire made from my little Zippo lighter.
Going nowhere.
You know, that kind of stuff. Tastes like chicken.
Right. The old trope.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Is there a scene in particular that, like, when you think when you sit down and think I'm going to rewatch Stargate, is there a scene that pops into your mind?
It's the, you talked about it earlier, but it's that sequence once he gets to the missile silo until he finishes the translation, like. That sequence. Mm-hmm. And if I had to pick one scene in that sequence, it might be the one where he goes through it all and he's drawing the 3D grid and he says, you need this seventh symbol. And then they all just look around the room and the general looks at Kurt Russell and Kurt Russell goes, and they open up the thing and they show him the device for the first time. Mm-hmm. That's big.
Yeah.
Right. Yes, indeedy.
Yeah, Yeah, what is it? Is it in Independence Day? Is it Brent Spiner who is talking to...
And he goes, do you want to see him?
Do you want to see him? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the same kind of vibe.
Yep.
Yeah. Do you want to see him? You want to see the thing?
What device?
Yeah. Yeah. That whole first part of the movie, and I think they do a great job of roping in all kinds of different fans based on things that you might be interested in, because that whole first, I don't know, might be like 20 minutes of the movie is very Indiana Jones-ish.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You've got the excavation in the 1920s. Then you've got the, let's decipher the puzzle here. Let's figure out what the code is. Let's figure out what these glyphs mean and everything else. And then once you've figured all that out, then we transition into an episode of Sliders. And mm-hmm. We have the gateway.
I believe Sliders did an episode of something like this.
I think they did.
Okay.
They
go to there's an episode in ancient Egypt, and there's some stuff and whatnot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as soon as you like that first 20 or so minutes, 20, maybe 25 minutes or so, and that's your Indiana Jones. Like you get the excavation, and especially when they're in Egypt and they're doing all the digging and everything else, I'm having flashbacks to Raiders of the Lost Ark.
How can you not?
Doing the same excavations. And then you just are doing a full left turn into a sci-fi movie. You've got the gateway, you've got the travel through space, you've got the, oh, look, our probe sent back information and it's across the known universe. And at that point, I'm sure as a kid, I was like, I'm done. I'm good. I'm hooked.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
I took out my little Velcro wallet and had no money in it. It was like, here, take all my money.
Yes.
I don't have any, but if you wait until next Friday, I might get a couple of dollars. You can have my comic book money for the week.
Now you're serious.
I would have been serious, yeah. I don't mess with comic book money.
No. Mm-mm. Most definitely not.
So before we wrap up and get into our three questions, I will ask this, and Bo, I know you already started to talk about it. Did any of you watch, Bo, I know you did, any of you watch any of the TV shows that they did as spinoffs to this? I mentioned before I've watched a couple of seasons of SG-1, and then we kind of lost track of it at that point. But Pat, did you watch any of the TV shows?
I started SG-1, and I'm reasonably intrigued and would love to watch it more. We stopped at the... I trying to think of when I stopped, and it was early on. I liked the premise. It was fun. And it just, everything else that it needed watching kind of got in the way. But yeah, that's on the list of bingeable seasons or bingeable TV shows.
Yeah. Yeah.
Certainly.
And Bo, you've watched almost all of them or all of them?
I've seen all of them at least once. Okay. I've seen SG-1 and Atlantis multiple times.
Okay.
The
shows are definitely a product of their time. I mean, they're a little campy, but in a good way. One of the, the story goes, one of the requirements Richard Dean Anderson had for taking the role of Jack O'Neill was that he was able to play it a little more comedically than the Kurt Russell character. And I gotta be honest, I don't know that you can make what turned out to be a 14 season show with that character. He's just got so much, but they kept a lot of the stuff with O'Neill and his son and whatnot. So that was good.
I guarantee if they had had him play O'Neill in the movie, he would have found a way to disarm that bomb.
Oh, 100%.
Yes. Yeah.
100%.
Or rig up some kind of a pulley system to get it out of the way.
And I think that was another fun premise of that series, was they were never afraid to make that joke.
Yeah.
Like they would make the tongue-in-cheek reference to MacGyver. They would make the tongue-in-cheek reference to, things. It kept it amusing.
Yeah.
And it still, they still did a really good job of I think a really good job of a serialized show with character arcs and and growth, but still, you know, monster of the week kind of format. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to a new planet and we're going to see what's there. You know, with the big bad in the background and all that good stuff. But and it was really well done. And the impressive thing to me about SG-1 was how it was able to survive change in the cast. Like, you see some of these shows and they try to continue after some of your main cast has taken a step back or left, and it fails. Well, they were able to pull and replace and do a really good job of it. I mean, Michael Shanks, who plays Daniel Jackson, leaves for a few seasons in the middle.
Yeah, I was going to say, did they have several changes over the course of the show?
Yeah, Michael Shanks is gone for, I want to say, 3 or 4 years. And he would come back off and on as in alternate ways, but they found a replacement for him that worked really well. Yeah. When Richard Dean Anderson kind of wanted to step back, they brought in Ben Broder. And it was good. They did a really good job of that. And then they were able to spin off into Atlantis in a way that was not, you know, sometimes these spinoffs, you just feel the contrivance. But they were, they laid the groundwork for it in a way that made sense and it felt good. And they brought enough characters across. And Don Davis, who plays the original, who plays General Hammond in the first, I would say, 8 to 10 seasons, maybe. They replaced him with Beau Bridges, for crying out loud. I mean, you know, they were able to get people to do it. And even the, like, I could keep going, but, you know, even the guest stars, Dom DeLuise, for crying out loud. Now, granted, his sons were both part of the production team. Like, they were producers and directors and all over that show. They even did an episode, a couple episodes, but their 200th episode, I think, they did an episode about a TV show being made about a Stargate-like device. And they had a whole nother set of actors, and it was this whole meta, like, show inside the show thing. And one of the DeLuise boys, if I remember correctly, plays the lead in the show in the show. It was just goofy.
Yeah. Sounds like it.
They had episode. Yeah. I could go on for days, but it all started here with this movie, and it was a great pilot. Don't tell Roland Emmerich I said that. He's not a huge fan of the show. It's too campy, too, you know, not what his vision was.
Yeah. All right. We got anything else we want to say about Stargate before we go translate some three questions so we can open up the gateway and find all the answers we're looking for?
Dial home, baby. Let's go.
All right. Here we go.
He asks each traveler three questions.
It's impossible to answer.
Impossible because you don't know the answer.
Nobody could answer that question.
I want to ask you a bunch of questions. I want to have them answered immediately.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
All right, question number one. If you could travel through the Stargate to any movie universe besides the Stargate universe itself, which one would it be and why?
Well, I gave this a lot of thought. And then especially with the
I would expect no less, Pat.
Yeah, and then I realized the answer is my face. I go to Star Wars land.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's too hard to pass up, right?
Well, especially after having gone to Disney World and gone to Galaxy's Edge and had like a little taste of maybe this is what it would be like to live in the Star Wars universe.
Yeah, you're kind of like, I like this. I don't want to go.
Yeah.
You were in the Nexus, John.
Basically. Yeah. It just, had I known I was in the Nexus, I would have made sure that my children were dressed in Victorian stuff, not just hoodies.
When it was time to check out, when it was time to check out, you were like, no, I will not leave.
Father,
I must go back.
Father, won't you go with me to build a lightsaber?
Why, yes, children, I will.
John standing on like an overpass with his arms stretched, waiting for the Nexus to come by and pick him up in the ribbon.
Basically, yeah. Yeah. Ah. Dickensian literature is the fire in which we burn.
Oh, there you go.
There you go.
So
did we just trifecta the Star Wars universe?
I think we did.
Okay. That was easy.
And I'm not all that surprised.
Not really. All right. Number two, Kurt Russell has played a wide variety of roles. If you had to pick one of his characters besides Jack O'Neill, can't be Jack O'Neill, to go through the Stargate with you, who would it be and how do you think they'd handle it? You know what I'm going to pick?
Well, I got mine easy.
Oh, yeah, go for it. I want to hear yours.
But I think I cut across you, John. Seriously, no. You go first.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Jack Burton.
Okay.
I mean, it's kind of, there are so many good roles, mm-hmm. but I think I'd have to go with Jack Burton.
Yeah.
And he probably would just be, you know, overwhelmed with things, but just take it all in stride. Mm-hmm. Kind of like Jack Burton in Big Trouble in Little China.
I like it. Bo, what have you got?
I don't know. That's a tough one. I think I might take Santa Claus from the Christmas Chronicles.
Nice.
One of the coolest Santa Clauses ever on film, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Brings a little magic to the table. He'd be one who would be like, okay, so I'm on another planet talking to some aliens. What's up? I mean, the guy talks to elves every day. Let's mm-hmm. be honest here.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I almost went with Jack Burton because I kind of mm-hmm. want somebody that if we're going through to the, if we're exploring somewhere totally brand new, I want somebody who is completely flexible and, you know, can jump in and if need be, you know, do a bit of fighting if we have to, and has the kind of the bravado to be able to do that type of exploring. And then I thought about it a little bit more and I'm like, yeah, that's cool. But I also want somebody that's going to be pretty, you know, pretty easygoing, which I know Jack would be, mm-hmm. you know, old Jack, he would be pretty easygoing. And then I thought a little bit longer and I was like, you know what? We're going to go through this wormhole and we're going to end up in places where we have no clue who we are. And I want things to end up working out just fine. And I tried to remember what's a role that Kurt Russell has played where it just seemed like everything was going to fall apart and then everything ended up working out just fine. I'm going to take Captain Ron with me.
There you go.
Yeah.
And I'm going to paraphrase. I'm going to change slightly one of the quotes from the Captain Ron movie. My leg feels a lot better now, boss. I've always been a fast healer, you know, because I believe in Ramses, so that helps.
I believe in Ramses. That's awesome.
So I'm taking Captain Ron with me. I feel like even though we'll both be lost, Captain Ron will somehow find a way to get us to, you know, the we're not going to that planet. We're going to the one to the left. It's called Ted's.
Yeah. Yeah. Something's going to happen. May as well happen out there. Opposed to in here.
Right. Are we going to be going to any more human-type places? Oh, you heard of St. Croix? Yeah. Going to the island just to the left of it.
Yeah.
You heard of Abydos? We're here to Abydos? Yeah. We're going to the planet just to the left of it.
The other one that would be kind of fun is Mr. Nobody from the Fast and Furious franchise.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Sort of got a Phil Coulson vibe to him.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Number three, if you could choose any item from Earth to introduce to the people of Abydos, what would it be and why?
A motorcycle, because they're cool.
There you go.
Yeah, I was thinking the same. I was thinking some form of transportation, or because there's a lot of walking happening.
Yeah.
It's true.
Lots of sand, lots of walking.
Those flying things that the bad guys had were pretty cool.
They were.
Yeah, the Cylon Raiders. Those were cool.
Yeah. Right. That's right.
I would take an iPod loaded with a bunch of songs, and the first one I would play would be Roy Orbison's Ooby Dooby.
Cause that's what you do.
Cause that's First Contact music.
Yep.
Here's something that needs to be on Lower Decks. Anytime somebody makes First Contact, they need to play that music.
Oh my God. Yes.
As like a Starfleet Federation tradition.
Mm-hmm. That would be amazing.
That's the official theme of First Contact with alien civilizations.
Yes.
The owner of the Roy Orbison music catalog thanks you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Please stand for the Federation Interplanetary Anthem.
Ooby dooby.
Ooby dooby.
Ooby dooby.
Why do we play this? Well, you see. This was Zefram Cochran's favorite song.
I stopped myself. I had a comment I was going to make.
Yep. Just keep it all inside.
It was something about Andorians kneeling, but we're going to not go with there.
Oh, boy.
Oh, geez.
Good grief. I think we've kept John up past his bedtime, Pat.
I think so.
It's late, gentlemen.
Wow.
Have you had all your caffeine for today?
What are the odds that John's going to go off the deep end? They're high. They're very high.
Well, we did start this line of questioning with Ooby Dooby.
That is true.
Yeah.
We weren't exactly.
I don't know. I think my thing I take with me is possibly maybe something like a computer or an iPhone. So I have a collection of things that I could share, could share photos, could share music, could share all kinds of stuff. So maybe that's what I take with me.
Got to bring yourself a charger with you.
That's also true. That is also true. Or a lightsaber.
Well, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. If that's a thing.
Bring one
yeah.
of my lightsabers with me. I mean, I have three over here, so yeah. I'm going to stick with the iPod filled with songs. And the first is Ooby Dooby.
Love it.
That's my choice. That is the choice of a new generation. All right.
And the Pepsi folks, now your check is in the mail.
I'm trying to see if we can get some corporate sponsorship here. I go say stuff that's going to get me in trouble with corporate sponsors, but got to keep people entertained.
Mm-hmm. You do.
And when it's late at night, I got to keep myself entertained too.
Yeah.
As I tell my own children, as long as I'm entertained, we're all going to be okay.
I was going to say the rest is gravy.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, gents, I enjoy every opportunity we get to sit around and talk about movies, and especially movies like this. I love this movie. This is an awesome movie.
Indeed it is.
Agreed. Agreed.
You know what else is an awesome movie that we're going to talk about next week?
Hmm.
Two Captains. Oh, I see the balloons go off when I do two.
Oh, that's weird.
That is weird. Okay, I don't know.
What are they detecting? What? Why balloons?
Apparently, peace for balloons.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. Zoom is weird.
Indeed.
Yeah. Next week is Star Trek Generations. Two captains enter. Only one captain leaves. No spoilers on who it is. but, you know. And then 2 weeks from now, we got Time Cop. And then 3 weeks from now, we got Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. If you're over on the Patreons with us, we've got the 1984 movie Starman, which has one of the creepiest transformation scenes you will ever see in a movie. So if you've seen it, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Indeed.
Yep, yep. And the Patreon short, Oblivion, from 1994, starring George Takei.
Oh my.
Oh my. Indeed. So that's what we got coming up for the rest of the month of April. So we would love to see you back here. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, tell everybody to go listen to 30-something movie podcast, because eventually at some point we're going to be here long enough, we're going to cover a movie you love, if we haven't already covered several dozen of them. So hit us up on 30podcast.com and then come on back here next week for Star Trek Generations and a bunch of other sci-fi stuff the rest of this month. As always, thank you, Bo, and thank you, Pat.
Thank you, John.
Everybody, be excellent to each other. Go watch some good movies, and we will see you back here next time.